You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Yeah, tonight's going to be pretty awesome. Talk about a good time. Finally, after all of the build-up, all the lead-up, we get to watch some real hockey here in Seattle. I mentioned some of the reasons I'm excited earlier. Everything from taking our rightful place as one of the great cities in this country and deserving of having all of the major sports here, and hockey is another step in that direction, to just my love of watching this game. I grew up with it and just so excited to share it with all you guys here in Seattle. So with that in mind, really excited to talk to a legend right now. Cammy Granato, yes, she's a pro scout for the Kraken, but beyond that, Olympic medalist, hockey Hall of Famer, and just incredibly honored to have her on the show today. Hi, Cammy. How are you?
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm like really excited for tonight. Like, I'm kind of counting down the hours until we get to watch this thing on ESPN. How about you?
Oh, yeah. You're not the only one. It's super exciting. It is surreal. Just after all the time when it was a concept and we were, looking at players and then just watching the building get built and watching the practice facility get built and then just actually knowing that they're having their first game. We're having our first game tonight. It's super exciting, and it's kind of surreal that it's finally here.
So, as a pro scout, what do you do? What goes into being a pro scout for the Seattle Kraken?
So, it was a little different with building a team. I mean, it's the same concept of scouting when you're building a team or when you're scouting when you have a team. But for us, we had to build a team from the ground up. So, basically, you were watching players. You're writing reports on their attributes, their skill set, their character, their effort. Those are the sort of things that you're putting into a report for the management to read. And for the last couple of years, it was getting everything in the database that we could possibly, because our database was empty, just getting all the information from all the players around the league. And then also focusing in on the ones that we thought might be unprotected. Those are the ones we really wanted to watch. And then free agents, look at them. And so that's really what a scout does. You watch games, you report on players, and you put them into the database.
And then you end up building this team. You get a chance to see it kind of come to life in front of you. What kind of team will we see?
Well, I mean, I think that, our management was pretty clear on wanting to build a team with speed and size. And I think we've accomplished that. And I know, just the style, it should see an aggressive team. We've got some real strong veteran leaders on the team, and we've got some younger players that are up and coming. And so I think as people probably, if you've watched preseason, that the team is a competitive team. So it's exciting to see it all come to fruition and to see what happens. But I think, yeah, we'll have a real competitive team.
That's pretty cool. We're talking to Cammy Granato here on 710 ESPN Seattle. I've heard you before mention players with grit, and I know that word carries a lot of weight in a hockey community. How do you spot it as a scout? How do you know a player has that grit?
I think it's pretty clear when you see at the compete level. If you watch them long enough and you see them maybe back-to-back at a game and they're still competing the second game or at the end of the game, if they're down or if they're playing responsibly defensively, if they're up, and just, you can get a sense of it overall when you watch a player. It's not hard to spot, but you have to watch players consistently to see that.
Well, and it makes sense, right? I mean, it's such an exhausting game, and they skate so hard. I know it's for a shorter amount of time, but just the amount of effort that you would think necessary to be a great player. How much do you look at talent versus that, X factor, whether it's effort or grit or sandpaper, whatever phrase you like to use for it? How do you judge those differences?
It's a balance. I mean, you definitely want character on your team. But it's a balance. There's, some games you have to give players a break too, because it might be their last game on the road and they just played a back to back, and you got to give them, that little room to know that, like, everybody has an off game. But if you watch a player consistently, you know, you can see it. And definitely, you're not just wanting to get the most talented player. You want to get a player with character like that. So you want a good locker room. You want a good environment for the whole team. So that is definitely a consideration for success.
I was talking earlier with our group in here, and we were talking about Mark Giordano named captain yesterday and the four guys who are going to wear the A as well. And I was trying to explain just some of the reverence that C holds in the hockey community. How do you describe a hockey captain?
You know, everyone has their own style. I was captain of the national team for, I think, over a decade. And for me, it was always about making sure the team, you know, I was looking after the team first. And it is, you know, there is a big weight in that and knowing that, like, you have to think that way. But I mean, Mark Giordano is just a natural leader. He's just a character guy. He's, you know, I think that as an older player too, he's got so much experience that the younger players really like look up to him and listen to him. So I think that Seattle, you know, the Kraken are in good hands with him at the helm. So and the other leadership group, all the assistant captains as well, are veterans. They all work hard. They've all proven themselves in the league, and it is important. It is important to have a strong leadership, and I think looking at our group, it is.
It dawns on me, you were on the O2 team, right? Did you play with Shannon Kennedy or Courtney Kennedy, rather?
Yeah, I played with Courtney Kennedy.
Yeah, I went to high school with them. She was really, really good.
She's amazing, and she's like one of the funniest people on earth. So I don't know if you had, you know, the pleasure of like knowing her, but like there's no one that makes me laugh more than her.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's awesome.
Yeah,
so
I knew
at Boston College now.
Yeah, really cool. I knew her sister better. She was my year. Courtney was a couple of years younger, but it's a heck of a career you've had, and being inducted into the Hall of Fame and the Olympic medals and everything. And, you know, how did you decide that you wanted to do this and be a part of the whole Kraken deal?
Well, you know what? Ron had given me a call a couple years ago, right when the scouting team was being formed. And I was actually like excited when I heard that Seattle was coming into the league, because I'm only 2.5 hours north of there in Vancouver. And so I thought, oh, I'd love to be involved in that team. And I got the call, and Ron had mentioned, you know, are you interested in scouting? And I was like, you know what? Like, yeah, like it sounds like something that comes kind of natural as a player anyway. You often analyze the game, and I've been around hockey my whole life with my brothers. You know, my brother Tony was, you know, played the Olympics. He played in the NHL for 13 years. My husband played in the NHL for 18 years. My brother Don is a coach with the Buffalo Sabres now. So hockey's like, you know, it was there ever since I was born, and I'm pretty much obsessed with it. So that's my main sport that I liked from the minute I can remember. And so I think analyzing hockey is just a natural thing. And that's the position for me when it came about. I was like, it was a definite, like, I didn't really have to think about it. Like Ron said, take the weekend to think about it. And I was like, before I hung up, I thought in my head, well, I'm saying yes. This is an amazing opportunity. And I feel really grateful to be a part of such an amazing organization as well. And he's a great person to work for.
We were talking to John Buchagross about an hour ago, and I'll let you go here in a moment. But he mentioned that one of the things he loves about hockey, and I love this phrase, he says, it's a sport that is built on sacrifice. What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, I think you do have to sacrifice. There are a lot of miles. I know for us growing up in Illinois, like the miles you have to go to play hockey, there were only like 4 rinks in the whole state of Illinois. And you know, you're on an hour trip to go to your game sometimes, or 2 hours to wherever. And I think maybe he means the sacrifice like that. Also, possibly, like, you know, when you look at the prize at the end of the Stanley Cup, the sacrifice it takes to get there, the amount of games you have to win, and the, you know, the grind of the playoffs and the regular season, you know, that sacrifice as well on the ice is great. So, you know, perhaps he was, you know, speaking to one of those, but not sure. But I know Booch well, but I'll pick his brain on that one.
That's good stuff. Well, Cammy, we appreciate it. Congratulations on the new gig. Congratulations on it finally coming to fruition tonight. We're looking forward to all watching together. So thank you so much. Hope to talk to you again.
Yeah, no problem, Mike. Thank you.
All right, there you go. There's Cammy Granato. She's a pro scout now with the Kraken, but of course, Olympic medalist, Hockey Hall of Famer, big-time hockey family. And, you know, she's pointing out there, talking through, you know, her potential meanings for sacrifice. It's another interesting point. When you think about hockey, it has a it's not as long as the baseball season. It doesn't have that same level of grind over the course of 162. It's 82 games, so the same length as the baseball season. It is a physical contact sport, not quite necessarily to the level of the NFL, but there is a lot of hitting and physical play in hockey. Think about the combination of how long it is and how long the season is with how much hitting there is. I mean, there's more hitting, fine, in the NFL, but they only play 16 games. They do it once a week.
Yeah, and the plays are 3 to 8 seconds long.
There are more games in baseball, but there's no hitting. There's none of that physical contact. The NBA has the same number of games, but again, doesn't have that same level of physical contact. I know that there is contact, but it's not a contact sport necessarily the way hockey is. And so that combination of those two things is pretty brutal. And for those guys to come out at the other end of it and then go all the way through the postseason where all of the series are 7 games, like that's a big thing. And so I love this expression that it's a sport based on sacrifice. I think Buchagras totally nails it and is one of the cool things about the culture that surrounds the hockey and the NHL.
I also love that I think probably the first time I've ever talked to an Olympic gold medalist.
Oh, really?
Right?
I don't know. Maybe?
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of them in my cell phone.
I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to think about whether I've ever talked to an Olympic gold. We had a Paulo
Ono. I waited
Ono
on Michael
on
Phelps
here.
Once.
You waited on him? How was that?
Yeah, because there's an Olympic training center in Colorado Springs.
Right. Oh, so there must be Olympic athletes through there all the time.
I think he was the biggest one that I ever met. I used to love when the volleyball and basketball girls came in because I felt short for once. I'm 5'10", so I'm not normally.
You recognize like when the bobsled guys come in or like, you know, hey, what do you do? Oh, I do skeleton luge.
Would I recognize them? No. But yeah, Michael Phelps came in on like a random Tuesday night when it was snowy and cold. So there was like no one in there and just had a couple drinks. I think he had a broken ankle or something at the time. So he was just
Oh, I was hoping you were saying, like, yeah, he ate 150 chicken wings.
No.
something totally unique.
Just chill, just by himself.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Pretty cool. And we get a fun chance to see the whole thing tonight. Game will be on ESPN. And then after that, it shifts to Root Sports for the local games. But pretty cool in Vegas, too. So you get everything, the whole show that goes with the Las Vegas Golden Knights. They do quite the opening role-playing situation and crazy graphics and 3D. It's pretty awesome. So looking forward to watching that tonight. It is 9:15. Let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, after all the waiting, the building, the introduction of the name, the roster, finally tonight we will see the Kraken as they start their inaugural season in Las Vegas. Seahawks, in their opener, went 2-14-76. Mariners the next year, 64-98. So it sounds really exciting here in the mid to late 70s until the teams actually started playing and did not perform very well. The Sounders a little bit more successful when they started in 2009. They went 12-7-11. Well, the Kraken, they got a pretty decent spot here. Weak division, favorable draft process. So the expectation is they should have a playoff team in year one. Yesterday, news, they named Mark Giordano as team captain. 4 players will rotate through as the 2 alternates each night. That's Jordan Eberle, Jaden Schwartz, Yanni Gourde, and Adam Larson will all wear the A at various points. That captaincy has immense history and meaning in NHL dressing rooms. Players should treat that honor with great reverence, and they do. But there is also an official role, just sort of an FYI. The captain or the alternates, if he's off the ice, are the only ones designated to communicate with referees. They'll be the ones to hear explanations of rules, etc. So there is actually a purpose to that C as well. Unfortunately, it looks like COVID has ripped through this roster. Up to 5 players may miss tonight's opener, including first-line center Jared McCann. What are you watching for? I'm watching to see how well they can keep control of the puck. Can they get it into the offensive zone, cycle it, and keep it there? And then what does that first line look like, especially if McCann can't go? We've been curious as to whether or not they can carry the scoring for a team that may struggle to put the puck in the net. What does that look like without the guy who's been centering those 2 forwards thus far in the preseason?
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Been talking about it all day. John Gruden officially resigning as the head coach in Las Vegas yesterday after a second group of emails surfaced in which he used homophobic and misogynistic language. This followed last week's emails in which he used racist language to describe DeMora Smith, the head of the players' union. The email sent from Gruden to Bruce Allen, where when Gruden was at ESPN, Allen at the time was the team president in Washington. In them, he calls Roger Goodell a homophobic slur. He criticizes him for forcing Jeff Fisher to draft a gay player, although he used another slur. He also complained about the hiring of female officials. Oh, by the way, he also exchanged photos with Allen of topless women, including Washington cheerleaders. Again, I keep coming back to this, and you just heard, I said, Bruce Allen was the team president. The president should involve some level of the business operations as well, which I would think means that the cheerleaders eventually reported up to him. I don't know whether that makes it even worse or not, but the fact that he was sharing topless photos of his employees seems completely shocking to me, even amongst all of the other allegations here. There's a lot to come out in a very short time. We'll say this. Gruden forfeits his right to work in the NFL. His comments are gross end statement. Also interesting, though, to try to see how this came out and what we can learn from that, whether the investigation here into the culture of the Washington football team will yield more information like this, and how owner Dan Snyder could possibly survive this seems beyond me at this point. Interesting that only John Gruden has been taken down so far. Mike Florio even speculating yesterday, Pro Football Talk, that the league wanted Gruden to resign and threatened to leak more emails if he did not. I don't know why the league would specifically go after Gruden, though.
I was thinking the same thing. I don't know.
Because of the Goodell thought stuff? I don't think that it would be that petty. Roger Goodell is paid not to be petty. I don't understand exactly what's happening here, but it doesn't smell right. And you get the sense that there are going to be more shoes to drop. I do wonder if Gruden was singled out because he's the only one who feels this way. Negative. Is he the only one stupid enough to provide written proof of how he feels? Possibly. But also possibly just because somebody in the league office who had control or access to these emails hated him enough to leak the proof. Be curious enough if other people do as well.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, if Pete Carroll is going to retreat even further into what makes him, he did get some good news this week. I believe the Seahawks will attempt to run the ball more often. Don't they have to try to soften the blow of not having Russell Wilson? And if so, Coach Carroll's going to be Coach Carroll. To do that, he could use Chris Carson. Sounds like he will be healthier. Pete's saying that he made a turn, a big turn, over the course of this week. So hopefully that means he'll be out there on Sunday. Gerald Everett should be back as well. Looking forward to him. Ethan Posick is going to be practicing. So some good news there, finally, on the injury front for the Seahawks. It was a crazy sports day yesterday. Monday Night Football ends with an OT touchdown. Baltimore beats Indy behind just an absurd performance from Lamar Jackson. I will say he is the most exciting, most fun player to watch in the league. I don't know if he's the best player. He's in the conversation for sure. But he is definitely the one non-Seahawk that I will look at on the schedule and be like, him. I got to watch him this weekend and see what he's doing. Meanwhile, baseball postseason, Red Sox walk it off for the second straight night. This time it was a ninth inning sack fly, which eliminated the Tampa Bay Rays. Red Sox move on. Braves take a 2-1 series lead. Jock Peterson with a 3-run home run that was a pinch hit home run. Tremendous finish in L.A. Dodgers fall despite what they thought was going to be a game-winning home run. It fell short in the wind. Giants are up 2-1. And then, we'll see, today we've got Houston-Chicago game 4. That's at 11 o'clock, so just a couple hours from now. Milwaukee, Atlanta 2, Giants in L.A. at 6. That's what you need to know. We do it every hour at quarter past the hour. It's interesting going through some of these text messages coming in, and unsurprisingly, we get some pretty lousy ones and people who just have what I think are some very outdated ideas or wanting to make excuses for various players or cast blame elsewhere. I'm not going to get into reading all of those and this and that, but you know, I would hope you can see the difference between people and what it would mean to have topless photos of employees and share them through email and what people decide to do in their personal life. Those are very different. And you know, judgments about people's personal lives aside, I would think that any organization, Maura, you brought up some of the potential things that have been accused here of the Washington football team in terms of taking pictures of women without their knowledge, potentially without their clothes, without their knowledge.
When they arrived to a tropical photo shoot in another country, their passports were taken from them.
What is the deal with that?
And they were told to entertain male clients. It all sounds very disgusting.
So it just sounds like a gross culture. I mean, those are some of the details, and you sort of add them all up together, and it just leads to a culture that sounds incredibly problematic. That's why this investigation started to begin with, right? Because of accusations of a problematic culture. Well, then once you start getting more and more evidence out of it like this, I mean, if they thought that using John Gruden as some sort of a misdirection, like, hey, look over here, we'll throw him as the scapegoat, and then the rest of the Washington team will escape unscathed, I think they have badly misjudged that. Most of what I've heard today, I don't think I'm alone in saying, yeah, John Gruden is horrible. Let's also take a look at the other folks involved. Bruce Allen worked in Washington at the time. What's the investigation into? It's into Dan Snyder and the culture of his team. If his team president was sending photos, topless photos, of employees to other people, that's like five steps into being completely inappropriate. And I would think something bad enough to ultimately get Dan Snyder removed as the owner of the Washington team. We've seen it before. We've seen it with Donald Sterling. We've seen it with Jerry Richardson. It is not out of the question. Yes, these guys tend to protect each other. Owners and people with money tend to protect each other to a point. You protect each other until your own skin is at risk. And at some point, there will be enough questions asked that the rest of them will say, no, 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 sorry, Dan, you got to go. And they'll force him out. I think it'll happen. For the first time, I actually have confidence that Dan Snyder won't be the owner of the Washington team forever. At least that's my thought.
And I just can't imagine that it ends with him from when it comes from an owner standpoint.
Well, that there are other owners that do the same thing. Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, it's
hard to believe that a meathead culture of football is going. It's just a Dan Snyder isolated incident.
Maybe. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, he does seem to be specifically problematic. Could there be other owners problematic as well? Yeah. I mean, we've heard some of the stuff with Jerry Jones and his kids and the party buses and some of the stuff that goes on in Dallas. So when there's entitlement, can there be some really awful things that go with it? Sure. Dan Snyder also seems specifically problematic himself, and the way he's run that franchise from every level just seems to be a complete disaster. So
there was something I thought of earlier in your conversation with G, like an important conversation about this entire situation, what it says about our future. And it reminded me of something that I heard in college, which was, when was the last time you had a meaningful conversation with someone who didn't look or come from exactly the same background that you did?
Yeah.
And your perspective can drastically shift in a hurry.
That's for sure. I totally agree with that. Well, we're not quite, we may look similar, but Brock and I are very different. We will hear from Brock coming up next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Ewert is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Ewert says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. I'm doing well. Doing well.
Good. It's nice to hear your voice.
How was it yesterday? Good day. Good day at Chambers.
Great day at Chambers. Is there a bad day at Chambers? No.
Well, when the greens are all brown and your grandfather's upset about it, that's pretty bad.
I know. Poor Papa. He was so mad about that.
Yes.
The day he died. Yes. One of the last things he ever said to me was how much he hated Chambers Bay on television.
Michael, have they fixed those greens at Chambers yet? They were so brown for the Open.
They looked great yesterday, man. It was perfect down there. Just a great, great day.
So. You shot 77, man.
Yeah,
that's
wasn't
awesome.
That great? No.
That way to go, buddy.
Do that. But add 11 to that, and you're right.
There you go. Very respectable.
What do you make? Yeah, I felt pretty good about it. What do you make of the John Gruden deal, man? What an ugly, there's only so much you can say about what he said. It's ugly. It's nasty. Yeah. Like, there's not really any other opinion on the things that they uncovered from his email. But where do you think this goes?
How many other folks in the NFL are nervous this morning?
I would think tons.
Yeah. So and this came about, from what I understand and listening to different sources and folks, is just in information is just was in the digging into the Washington football team, correct? And the Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen, the former GM president there, and some of the bridges that were burned. And I'm sure, you know, from what I understand, that is where this was turned over. And you think of, you know, coaches that have been fired, people that have been let go. We have seen this now a couple different times. Down at Arizona State, there was an assistant that was let go, and he turned in lots of emails and pictures that ended up costing folks their jobs of illegal recruiting. Right. And we have, you know, seen this at different colleges and folks that have been let go. And, you know, you put things in writing, you put them in email. And how many times, Salky, over 13 years with different stories, have we said what you do in darkness and you think you can get away with, Tiger Woods comes to light. And yeah, this is a pretty awful stain for John Gruden. And I do wonder how many of that old school world where that language was acceptable or laughed at or just, you know, shoved to the side, sit there and go this morning, man, you know, am I going to be, mm-hmm. you know, am I going to be exposed?
I wonder if anybody will come forward and say before they get exposed, say, hey, before this comes out, I want to tell you, I used to talk this way.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I wonder if anybody will do that. I mean, like, look, we were just talking about it in the other room, Moore and Justin and I. Like, if you had like audio transcript of me with my friends in the 1980s when I was a kid, yep. I mean, you'd hear a lot of things that I would not be even consider saying today. I mean, the culture was different. I was different.
Do you remember when we tried to educate Kyle and Howdy and, you know, some 80s movies, Mike?
Right.
And we started to watch some of the 80s movies. You're like, you can't say that.
Well, and not just things you can't say, but I mean, the way, especially, you know, gay people were used as a punchline. Like, it was a completely different time and culture. And I was a little kid, you know, young kid. I've changed since then. But yeah. I wonder whether there are folks that would come out and be like, and I, you know, another older coach who comes out and says, yeah, I probably have similar things. Before they come out, let me just come out here right now and tell you. Yep. I don't feel the same way I did then.
Yeah.
I wonder if anyone will do. I doubt it, because I think everybody will try to hide for as long as possible.
Well, and I also wonder if further light is shown into some of the darkness and nastiness of that Washington football team, and Daniel Snyder in particular. And I know that he's paid some fines and they've had, you know, some training and all of that they've gone through. But are you telling me that if you dug through his emails, mm-hmm. that you were?
Well, I don't know. And maybe he was, quote unquote, smarter about how he hides some of that stuff. I mean, where they have evidence versus where they don't. But I think it does speak to, and you and I have talked about this for years, just the entitlement that can grow out of leagues like the NFL. And certainly they're not the only one. But how much, you know,
power, control.
Exactly. And you feel like you deserve it, and you have the ability to control so much. We joke about old movies, about sports, but The Program is the one I almost always reference, because I think there's a lot of truth to the way James Caan is trying to control everything around him, and he can't.
And that is a bunch of the old guard. I mean, that was the way. I mean, I even played in an era where coaches tried to ride on elevators by themselves, and, you know, they tried to could kind of have that much control and that much power. And, you know, that's just not the way in 2021 that things operate. Mm-hmm. And we see that at the collegiate level. And even Nick Saban is a guy that people would look at and go, oh my gosh, what a control freak. He's got a button on his desk to open up his office door. And what a power hungry.
To close his office door behind you. And that's what makes it so awesome.
But I think if you chatted with folks that work down there and you see how open and transparent and how he welcomes the media in and how he leverages all of those relationships and understands that this isn't just a power grab and a total control, that if I'm going to market and I'm going to recruit and I'm going to bring everybody aboard, it's a different world today than it was then.
You ready for the Kraken tonight on ESPN?
You wearing your sweater?
I'm wearing my sweatshirt for sure.
Are you wearing it today?
I'm wearing it right now as we
speak.
Are you
really?
If you're watching on the stream right now, 710sports.com. Yeah, I got my light blue, kind of baby blue Kraken quarter zip. Yeah, I got a quarter zip on today.
I'll be watching tonight. I think me and millions will be watching in some curiosity. More than anything, to begin with, some fandom, certainly. The hockey faithful in the Pacific Northwest that have been waiting for this day for decades and decades and decades, who have loved, you know, all of the minor league programs and some of the rivalries this is going to create, and frankly, the role play. Because I'm expecting a heavy, heavy pre, is it puck drop?
Yes.
Role play in there in Vegas.
Well, they do that. I mean, that's part of
Vegas, and I can't wait for
story,
it.
And, you know. They do the whole role playing thing before they.
So are they going to try to kill a kraken?
Yeah, do they slay an octopus? I mean, it would make sense, right?
It would.
I don't know when a knight would meet an octopus. Generally, the knights don't go like out onto the water.
Mike, it's role playing.
Okay,
it's role playing.
So you have some sort of like a mariner knight of some sort, right? That goes out there and battles the vicious kraken.
I don't mean to correct you, but it's either ice blue, boundless blue, or shadow blue are the official colors. I'm not sure which one you have on.
I don't know.
What did Salk say? Baby blue?
Baby blue.
Well, yeah,
I'm going to need you to throw that one out.
What do you think this Salk?
Is? Ice, it's not, what do you say, ice blue,
ice
shadow blue?
Boundless blue is the darker one, so that's either shadow or ice. I think that's ice.
I would say ice, don't you think?
Yeah.
Maybe it's shadow. I don't know.
I mean, ice would make sense with the sport.
That's North Carolina blue.
It's similar. Yeah, it's got some of that Tar Heel blue to it. Yeah,
honestly,
some of that.
Get baby blue. Spit it out your mouth.
Okay, I'll never say ever sorry, I'll never say hear baby blue again.
Thank
hey,
you, Justin.
Brock, we're talking about beautiful cities, Seattle obviously being one of them. You travel as much as anybody I know. Most beautiful city, like underrated beautiful city in the United States.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That is... Ooh, that is tough. There's parts of the you know, everybody always talks about the Bay Area. I remember a couple years ago, one of my daughters had a basketball tournament, and I had never, like, driven east, right? Like, Walnut Creek, and then there were just,
awesome,
you know,
out there.
Oh, my gosh. And then there were some, like, inlets and rivers and little places. It was just, it was incredible.
The Bay Area is pretty spectacular.
And even north, you get a little Hippieville, but, like, you go a little bit north into
Marin,
some of the, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that everybody focuses like on San Francisco, but actually you can
go south. You ever go south? Go through
gorgeous.
Pacifica and then down to Half Moon Bay. Like, dude,
oh, Half Moon Bay. There you go.
There's Brock Heward, who joins us every day here, 7:45 and at 9:30. Yeah, I got a text that comes in during that. It says, Salk, if people did come out and say this is what I said back in the day or what I thought, does that change things? If Gruden had done that, would it have changed things? Might have. If he had done it before, like, without knowledge that he was going to, like, once the emails come out, it's too late. What if you're a coach right now and you're in the NFL and you have said similar things to John Gruden in your not-so-distant past, but you do feel differently? Maybe you had your eyes opened last year. Maybe you read a book. Maybe you had a conversation. Maybe you went to a local home, you know, a friend's party or something, and participated in some of the conversation that started in this country over the last year or so. What if you talked to your team and said, hey, this happened? And then you came out to the media and said, yeah, this happened. I've learned more since then. I've changed since then. I don't want to sit here and worry that this is going to come out one day. I'll just tell you. Yeah, I did some things like that that I'm not proud of in my past. And, you know, I take responsibility. If that means I should be fired, then I'll be fired. But I hope you know that I've made changes. I feel differently today. And I'm ready. I would like to be able to move on in some other. Do you think that that would have success? I think it might. I honestly think it might.
No matter what, you're going to have people who are like, oh, he's just saying that to save face and on.
But
yeah.
You're saying it before there's any accusation against you. You just come out and say it.
Oh, sure.
There is no accusation. No one is accusing me of anything.
Take the bullet out of the gun first.
You just come out, take the bullet out of the gun and say, hey, this has happened in the past. I bet you that coach or that person or whoever it is would have some level of success with that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a professional PR agent. I don't know what they would, you know, advise people. But to me, it wouldn't be about PR at that point. It would just be about, like, hey, I want to do the right thing. I've made some changes. I've learned some stuff. I've made some mistakes. Here's what they are. I'd rather be ahead of it. I don't know. I don't know if it would work. And maybe I'm focusing on the wrong part of this. I mean, there's the actual things that did occur here are bad enough that you don't need to kind of go on to the next spot of the conversation. But it's just something that dawned on me and sort of listening to some of these mealy-mouthed apologies that you hear or denials or whatever the case may be, that maybe there are other ways this could go sometime in the future. Maybe you could pave the way for other people to really think differently and act differently. All right, we're excited for the Kraken tonight. We're excited for hockey. And hockey's unique. We talked about some of the things I love about it. It also comes with its own set of traditions. We'll give you the best of them next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
Yeah, as we get into hockey season starting tonight, obviously our rank list needs to involve hockey. So we're talking traditions. We're talking about some of the cool things that make this sport unique, make it stand out from the others. I do like that sports are all a little bit different. I don't think they all need to have the same rules. They don't all need to have the same thing. Well, but what about in baseball? Sports can be different. That's okay. I don't mind that. Hockey's different. It's got its own unique things. That's why I wish they would go back to ties, but whatever.
I ask a lot of dumb questions just to try to, like, get comparisons. I ask more like three times. I'm like, is there anything like a seventh inning stretch type song that gets played?
No, there's nothing quite like that. But all right, let's see. We were talking earlier about what their big goal horn will be. If you know this sound, you might live in Washington. There's the Washington State Ferry horn that will be played after goals.
Foghorn.
Sorry, foghorn.
You've almost gotten so many people in accidents this morning.
That's right. They'll be okay. All right, what do we got? Five. We don't have a lot of time. Best hockey traditions ranked.
Yeah, and you kind of stipulated you didn't want them to be specific to one single team.
Right, like throwing the octopus and stuff. No, they've got to be about the sport.
And there's a lot of playoff traditions, so I only went with one playoff tradition. These are more general.
Okay.
So, number five, yes. Organ music.
Organ music? Mm-hmm. Yes. Awesome. Yeah, they got to play What Should We Do with a Drunken Sailor. That's a big one, that hockey game.
Fits fitting here, too, for the Kraken. All right, number four. The salute to the fans after a home win. The team will come out and raise their sticks.
The stick salute.
Give the crowd a wave.
Yeah, and it goes with sort of the three stars that are awarded after the game. I do like the little stick salute. That's nice.
I like that actually soccer does that, where the players come out and clap. I always thought that was really great. I wish baseball did that.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Sports are different.
Number three, tapping the goalies' pads pregame. Kind of a good luck.
100%.
You're ready to go kind of thing.
Yeah, and usually, like, the best player or the captain has their own. They get to be last. Like, when I was a kid, I told you, growing up watching Ray Bourque at the Garden, he would get the last thing, and he had this whole routine with the goalie where it was like he would touch his, you know, his blocker and then his left pad and then his glove and then his right pad, and he'd start to leave, and then he'd circle back around and get the stick before he skated off. And I loved it. I would watch it every time I was at the game.
Like, you're
so
dubbing him ready to go.
Yes, watching stuff like that is cool when you get to go to games.
Yeah. Then number two is each player getting to spend a day with the Stanley Cup. Pretty cool.
Amazing. And then you hear all the stories of all the places it's been and what people have drank out of it and all of that.
Some gross stuff.
Yeah, and it's gone to some cool places and different continents. And there's a guy, what's the guy's name? Philip Pritchard or something like that. He's like the keeper of the cup and the white gloves and all of that. The reverence for the Stanley Cup itself is a cool, unique thing about hockey.
Yeah, and then they're allowed to just take it anywhere. That's the crazy part.
Yeah.
Is you can't even like stand next to it or touch it without gloves. You're like, yeah, strap it in the front seat of my car. We're going
off
road.
Once you've won it, you can do whatever you want with it. Philip hasn't won anything. And those guys won't touch it, by the way, until they've won it.
Very stupid.
They don't want to be photographed with it. They certainly won't touch it.
And then number one, the best hockey tradition is fighting and the etiquette involved in it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We talked about that earlier. Like, you don't punch unless the other guy is also thrown off his gloves. Once somebody goes to the ground, you don't punch again, or to the ice, you don't punch again.
Another player you respect challenges you, then you have to fight him. Whether you really feel like fighting that moment or not.
Yep. Hey, I got to go do this.
Then what about the fights that start at the very, very beginning, puck drop and gloves drop at the same time?
That's
retaliation fights?
An old score, settling something that's old.
And they wait until, okay.
There's a bunch of reasons to fight in hockey. And this is why, again, people, they don't fight in basketball or baseball or football. Yeah, I know. Hockey's different. They do fight in boxing. Like, different sports have different rules. Hockey allows fighting and you get 5 minutes in the box. That's the rule. Sometimes you fight because somebody took some liberties with one of your players. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you fight just to get your team going. Like, you just need a little energy. And
somebody like getting ejected, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of reasons to fight in a hockey game, and I love that element of it. All right, we got to go. We got to make way for Jake and Stacey. We were late yesterday. I feel like we're stealing some of their time, and that's not fair. I don't need Jake to be mad at me. I definitely don't need Stacey mad at me. Dear Lord. We'll get out of here. Matt Hasselbeck during the whole 9 o'clock hour tomorrow for the Matt Hasselbeck Show. Lots to get to with him. We'll have Michael Bumpus on tomorrow. We'll have a Kraken game to react to. So looking forward to tonight. Enjoy the game. I'll be on Twitter, I'm sure, tweeting about it. And we'll see you guys tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. See ya.